south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. So I get emails. Yeah, I get emails. And as I mentioned in previous shows, subjects on the top of the list are mating, dating, and kind of hooking up in Latin America. Then there's tons of questions about the cost of living here. But always on the top of the list is safety and security. I mean, people want to know the safest and most secure places to live, work, and or play, as well as places that are a must to avoid. Now, there's a wide variety of people that listen to this show who want to do the homesteading thing. It seems like everyone wants to get off the grid. Now, I know up in the States it's not easy. In fact, it's probably pretty much impossible for the average guy or family. However, if you have that in mind, man, Latin America is the place to be. I mean, look, it doesn't matter if you live at sea level where it's terrifically hot or in the Altiplano where it's beautiful spring-like weather all year round. That means plants of all kinds grow all year round too. So like a lot of you guys and gals up there who are thinking about getting off the grid or kind of off the grid, which is a good option, meaning if necessary, under duress, you could completely disconnect from the grid and not suffer at all, or at least not much. So the idea is to live fairly close to a medium or large-sized city, within an hour's drive anyway. And you still pop into the big city once in a while, every week or so, to pick up stuff at Ace Hardware, Walmart, Costco, or the big box stores. Even though, like me, you're probably adverse to doing that and giving places like that any of your business. Yep, it's true, we talk the talk, but sometimes we don't walk the walk. So, for now anyway, why suffer and do without when you'll have plenty of time to do that when the big reset button is pressed up north? Hey, you might have your butt placed at a nice safe distance from the epicenter of the first world collapse whenever that comes, and it could be tomorrow in 10 years, who knows? Though I kind of think closer to tomorrow. Still, if you're nicely set up a few thousand miles from ground zero, watching it all go down from here, just remember, even though they've got the Ace Hardwares, the Costcos, the Walmarts, Office Depots, etc., etc. down here too, do you think since they get all their stock from China, there'll be any products left to stock the shelves? So as many expats and gringos tell me, they take advantage of that stuff while it's here, but be prepared and get ready for when they're not. I think when the next big calamity hits up in the States, the first world franchises down here will shutter their doors. Now, you've heard me say I don't recommend living in a medium or large-sized Latin city. I think it's nuts to live in a medium or large-sized first world city, too. Any big city is ground zero for chaos when the poop hits the ventilator, whenever that is, and I don't want to be there when it happens. And I'd say, based on the emails I'm getting from you guys, most of you feel the same way, too. Now, you longtime listeners know my idea of living large is being off the Gringo tourist trail about an hour or so from the city. In other words, a couple of chicken bus transfers away. For example, where I'm doing this show right now, I'm in a real nice house in the middle of coffee fields. In fact, all this week, they've been harvesting. That's one of the crops they can't automate. It's all hand-picked, and I see three or four of them out there right now with white gunny sacks, cowboy hats, that's the outfit, machetes, even women and kids with machetes helping out, and a couple of mongrel family dogs. And you know, as hard as that work is, and it's back-breaking work because they fill those sacks up, they got to be 50 to 100 pounds and they're hauling them on their backs, even the women. They're always laughing and having a good time. In fact, I have to tell you that some of the happiest working-class Latin people I've ever seen are, get this, garbage men. Seen it for myself. I've been on the road behind many a garbage truck. Three or four guys in there just yakking away, smiling, telling jokes, having a good old time. You gotta admire them, they make a game out of it, always horsing around, throwing disgusting stuff at each other. Hey, it's handy, right? Down here it seems there's no shame in having a job like that because, you know what? It is a job, and it's steady. A growth industry, even. The world's never gonna run out of garbage, and unfortunately it's on the increase. How do we get on that subject? Anyway, I'm with you, that is with most of you guys and gals who send me emails saying, I wanna live off the Gringo tourist trail, kind of homestead, have a nice piece of land, nothing gigantic, but enough to be kind of self-sufficient. All right, great, especially if you're in the Altiplano, then you've got no heating or air conditioning bills either, so you can have a tiny little solar apparatus, maybe $5,000 into it at the most, and never have to buy electricity. Then, because it never freezes, you can buy one of those ultra-cheap but very effective solar hot water setups. At the most, you'll dish out $1,000 or $1,200 for that. But part of that equation is growing your own food, at least some of your own food. Because, you know, every nearby little pueblo, and if you're out in the boonies, there will be nearby pueblos here and there, they'll always have a daily more than abundant supply of very fresh fruits and vegetables at a quarter or less of what you pay up in the States for the same stuff. Actually, it won't be the same stuff. It'll be much fresher and doused with significantly less preservatives, additives, and herbicides. Not to mention, when you're out in the boonies, you'll be on the Eggman or the Egg Lady route. By the way, seems to be three kinds of eggs down here. Driveway chicken eggs, they're the best, you know. Chickens running around eating bugs and stuff like they have done for millions of years. And those eggs, almost always from untainted, uninjected, unadulterated chickens. So those are always really the best kind of eggs, but they're small compared to the eggs the Eggman's hauling around with them. Now that guy makes deliveries to local tiendas too. So when you walk into any tienda, you'll see a bunch of egg flats stacked in a corner on the floor with the eggs a lot bigger than driveway chicken eggs. So why is that? Well, they're coming from small local egg farmers with hens specifically bred to lay big eggs. So they're hanging around their little nests in the hen house and don't get out much at all. That means for sure, not nearly as happy or as free-spirited as those driveway chickens who are dodging traffic all day long. But still, those eggs are a much better choice than buying them from Walmart or Costco or any of the big chain Latin supermarkets whose eggs are coming from big, disgusting factory farms just like up in the States. So how can you tell? Well, usually by the slick packaging. You know, the more rustic and individual looking the eggs, the less processed and injected the hens will be. So by all means, don't be afraid to buy a carton of eggs that's got a few feathers on it or even some remnants of poop. A sure sign the chickens they came from are much more normal and less manipulated than those industrial egg farm chickens. By the way, did you know that up in the States, supermarket eggs are washed and sprayed with a couple of chemicals? Oh, and vets will warn you that if you give your dog an egg once in a while, which I do, you should never let him eat the shell. And of course, they always do. So if you're up in Cleveland or Cucamonga, take note. And for you listeners who don't eat eggs, well, scratch that. All right, so my idea of living large in Latin America is being close enough to a medium or large size Latin city that you can pop in when necessary. That way, all the modern first world conveniences like hospitals, doctors, lawyers, clinics, international airports, shopping centers, nice restaurants, culture, etc. are easy to get to in a hurry. My second living large prerequisite is living in your main residence anyway, in the Altiplano. That'd be anywhere from 3,000 to maybe 9,000 feet above sea level, with 5 to 6,000 feet being ideal. Why? Because, man, when you get to living 7,000 feet or more above sea level, it's awful cold at night. Days are fine. But, man, it seems like everyone who lives higher than 7,000 feet has a fireplace in the living room at the house. And, of course, gringos and expats living up higher than 6,000 feet usually are looking for space heaters. I mentioned that in a past show not so long ago. Now for me, because I'm picky and I've been living down here a long, long time and have been practically everywhere, I'm 100% sold on 5,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level. That, to me, is the absolute weather and temperature sweet spot. Oh, another thing, if you're at 7,000 feet or above, you'll find the air starting to get pretty thin up there, and some people have a problem with that. Especially if you're overweight, you're a smoker, or have any kind of respiratory problems at all. However, after a month or so, you do get used to it. But there is a point of no return when you hit around 9 or 10,000 feet above sea level. Some gringos and expats never get used to it. By the way, lots of populated spots like that in South America, like Peru, Ecuador, and Bolivia. In fact, Quito, Ecuador, the capital's way up there, over 9,000 feet. So it is damn cold at night. Even Bogota, Colombia, it's a little over 8,000 feet. A lot of gringos and expats huffing and puffing the first couple weeks they get down there. By the way, almost all those towns in the very high Altiplano are in South America. Oh, and for me anyway, there's one more negative thing about the high Altiplano. They do get a little bit of snow and ice. I'm from Chicago, and I've seen enough snow and ice to last me 6 lifetimes. So that's definitely not a draw for me. By the way, Cuenca, Ecuador, you know, International Living's great pick for the best expat retirement destination. That's a little over 8,000 feet too. So a little hard breathing and cold at night. Excellent weather during the daytime, though. That's why even the poorest of people have fireplaces in the house, or at least they're burning wood in the kitchen. Talk about respiratory problems. Anyway, Like I said, the altitude sweet spot for perfect weather is around 5,000 to 6,000 feet. You'll find there's a lot of places like that in Central America, and quite a few in Colombia and Venezuela too. However, as you know, Venezuela is the pits of hell right now, so hey, unless you've got a daredevil slash death wish gene in you, don't even think about it. On the bright side, they've found the cure for obesity. Maybe they'll put that on the tourist pamphlets. I heard in 2017 they actually had 8 tourists, a Japanese family who took a wrong turn on the way to Colombia. So again, my idea of living large in Latin America, that is having the perfect plan B, is to have your main residence in the Altiplano, yet be no more than 1, 2, or even 3 hours from the nearest beach. Could be a big lake or, my preference, the coast, one of the oceans, preferably the Atlantic Ocean. That's not to say there aren't some decent Pacific beaches too, there are a few. Some in Mexico, some in South America. As for Central America, yep, they've got a lot of Pacific beaches. Though they're sort of dark and ugly because of all the millions of years of nearby volcanic activity. And the Pacific beach waters are never clear and smooth like glass, as are the waters on the Caribbean side. Still, those Pacific beaches are 100 times better than the beaches where I come from in Chicago on Lake Michigan. Seems the only thing Great Lakes beaches have going for them is they've got nice white or nearly white sand. Big deal, huh? So to me, living large in Latin America is to be in the Altiplano, an hour or so from a medium or large-sized Latin city, so you've got access to everything, no more than a couple hours drive from a nice beach. And wherever you live, you need your own well or private water supply. I know you've heard me say this before. If at all possible, you don't want to be on municipal water. Unless, of course, you've got a nice big plot of land, let's say a half acre or so, then you could do what a lot of smart expats do. Install a supersized cistern that'll hold maybe 10 cubic yards of water or so. Now, a cubic yard will hold around 200 gallons of water. That means 10 cubic yards, 2,000 gallons of water. Now, the average Latin person uses about 20 gallons of water a day, about a fifth of what a gringo does, proving we waste just a hell of a lot of water. So in bad times, if things got really rough, and we scaled our water usage down to that of the average Latin person, then a 2,000-gallon cistern would last a single gringo expat about 200 days, two people, 100 days, four gringos and expats, about 25 days. Now remember, if you have municipal water here in Latin America, it'll flow at least 6 or 10 hours a day. So absolute worst case would be if municipal water was non-existent for an entire month. Highly unlikely, but who knows? Even if there's a power outage or the pumps break down, it won't last a month, maybe a couple days. But if you have your own well, which is always recommended, whether you're homesteading out in the boonies or out in the suburbs in a gated, guarded community, you really need a private well. By the way, there are plenty of gated, guarded communities outside the big and medium cities that are set up just like garden parks. And if you buy a lot there, there's so much greenery, hills, valleys, trees, etc., that no matter where you're standing on your lot or from your house, you won't see any of your neighbors at all. You feel like you're out in the boonies all by yourself, but you're really in a gated, guarded community. Now that's living large. Now remember, all decent gated guarded communities have their own private wells. But still, I always recommend you have a nice big cistern. And not one of those cheap plastic ones people have on top of their roofs. Not only are they eyesores, most of them are only made out of plastic and reinforced fiberglass and will only hold 250 to 500 gallons. What you want is a nice concrete cistern in your backyard or ideally under your garage slab. Again, you should shoot for one that's around 10 cubic yards. All right, then you're probably thinking, why do you need such a big one if your gated, guarded community has its own well? Or if you have your own well on your own private lot out in the boonies. In the case of your subdivision having its own private well, every couple months you'll get a notice saying they're going to shut the well down for a day, maybe more. They'll need to do that to clean the pump and their own big cistern. So can you handle a day or two without water? Well, you won't if you have a cistern. Then there'll be those days when you're running your water at the sink and it just stops. That's when you know there's a leak or a break in the pipes somewhere in your subdivision. And the fontanero, the guy in charge of the well and the pump, etc., has turned off the water to fix the leak. So on short notice or no notice at all, you might be without water for a couple hours. But not if you have a cistern, because it'll automatically switch in when the water pressure's down in your subdivision. Because you see, along with your cistern, you'll have a little auxiliary pump that senses the water pressure in your house, and if it drops below a certain level, usually 15 pounds per square inch of water pressure, it'll kick in and start drawing water from your cistern. In fact, sometimes it's so instantaneous you don't even know that the pump is kicked in. So a good question to ask is, how many times, let's say a month, is there a leak or a broken pipe or some other problem that causes the fontanero to turn off the water supply in your subdivision? Well, I'd say in my experience, and I've lived in quite a few of these gated guarded subdivisions, that happens once or twice a month for 2 or 3 hours at a time. But again, you won't notice it if you've got your own cistern and auxiliary pump. Another good question is, what does a big cistern like that cost? Well, I'd say probably around $500 to install complete, and the cost of the auxiliary pump and the sensors and valves and stuff, another maybe $200 or $300. So for less than $1,000, one-time cost, you got yourself a fail-safe water system. Do you have a fail-safe water system up in the States? I kind of doubt it. Oh, and don't forget, here in Latin America, you can take the water you get off your roof or any place in your property and use it any way you want. So, as in my case, I just have to open a valve and the rainwater goes right into that cistern. And I pre-filter it in a cheap and dirty way using a woman's nylon sock over the tube coming off the roof into the cistern. And that'll trap most of the big stuff, the leaves, twigs, spiders, debris, whatever, that the rainwater picks up as it's running off the roof. Though down by that little auxiliary pump, I also have a sediment filter, so it gets filtered once again whenever the pump kicks in and sends that water through the house. Now, as far as wastewater, you heard me mention in past shows, almost everyone down here, at least everyone with a half a brain who actually treats their wastewater, has a septic tank or a fosa septica system. It's what they call it in Spanish, fosa septica, which is a big underground concrete box-looking thing with little perforated PC pipe tentacles called feeders going deep into your yard. It's an age-old system, ecologically sound, and it works. Though, be sure to place it downslope and as far away from your house as you can. So in theory, down here in Latin America, each single-family house has one of those. In theory. But the fact is, and I just checked this statistic recently, 2/3 of gray water and human waste are not treated at all. They just go directly into some body of water, unfortunately. Though all houses and gated guarded communities and people living out in the boonies, like yourself, if you want to be off the grid and homestead, will have your own septic system. And the cost, well, you're probably talking about adding another $300 to $500 to your project. But you absolutely must install one. Funny, though, how all Latin American bureaucrats and politicians, all of them septic breath dunderheads themselves, they rightfully insist all new construction must have a septic system, and they force high-rise developments and malls and such to have modern waste treatment systems too, yet they do nothing to force the other 2/3 of the Latin population to get their solid wastes and gray waste under control. Which reminds me, the other day I was riding around with two very cool expat gringos, and one of them said, hey, look at that. There are around 10 guys with identical municipality shirts and shovels and brooms, sweeping the gutters and removing debris from a busy road. And the other guy said, they might not have the money for street sweeper trucks down here, but at least they got the guys out there working and cleaning up the roads. I said, yeah, it looks good, all right, but have you checked out the condition of the road we're on, the one they're cleaning? I said, look, there's at least 5 man-sized potholes every 100 feet. Meanwhile, the municipality's got 10 guys with shovels and brooms sweeping the side of the road. It just defies logic. Hey, that's why they call it the third world, right? However, if you live in a private, gated, guarded community where the buyers of the lots, houses, and condos own the roads and the common spaces and landscaping and such, it's a completely different story. Fact is, all over Latin America, there are some really beautiful subdivisions and fantastically manicured private lots. The thing is, they're private, you know, because it really is a fact everything the government touches, whether it's up in the first world or down here, turns to poop. But you knew that already, right? All right, suppose you're well into your plan B, and you've got a nice piece of land out in the boonies, plenty of room for fruit trees, avocados, anything you want to grow. You're in the Altiplano, you've got your own well, you plan on going solar and getting off the grid or almost off the grid. By the way, you'll want a gas stove for your kitchen. That way you can just buy a 100-pound tank of propane gas, and that will last 2 gringos about a year. Unless you have a gas dryer, then it might just last a half a year. But who needs a dryer when you've got a maid or cleaning lady that can hang your stuff out on the line? Hey, why waste the energy if you don't have to? And who knows, once in a while you might even hang some clothes on the line yourself. Though I have a gas dryer, so I'm guilty, and I use it all the time, especially in the rainy season. Yeah, you know, it's touch and go for drying your clothes on the line when it could rain at any time. But the other half of the year, no problem. All right, so you're living large out in the boonies. You've got a couple of avocado trees, lemon trees, mangoes, papayas, banana, anything you want. And I'm telling you, even if you've only got a third or a half an acre, there'll be times when you have so many fruits and vegetables. In fact, you'll have them falling off the trees. You'll have to give them away by the bushelful. I know, sounds unbelievable, but I'm giving away stuff to my gardener and cleaning lady all the time. Now, just one thing about avocados, my favorite fruit, or is it a vegetable? Anyway, now I've got three Haas avocado trees. They're new, and they're small, and they're hybridized. The bottom half of the tree is a certain kind of avocado that has tremendous root structure. The top half, a grafted hybrid Haas of the highest quality from Mexico. Now, my gardener says after 2 years, each one of them will be producing 300 avocados a year. You know what that means, don't you? I'll be giving away bushel upon bushel of that stuff. Or I'll be pooping green, or perhaps both. Now, what do you pay for a Haas avocado up in the States? I hear it's $2, $3, even $4 a piece. Well, in about 2 years, I'll have 900 of them falling from the sky. Oh, and what did I pay for each one of those hybridized bushes? Try $15 a piece. And when he brought them over, each one was about waist high, were already flowering with tiny little avocados on them. Now, wouldn't you like to get in on some of that action? Oh, and I almost forgot my little announcement here. You know, my next Expat Insider Seminar will be held in Central America, right smack dab in the Altiplano, starting Saturday, July 7th through Thursday, July 12th. So if you want to get in on the early bird discounts, and they're substantial, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and put seminar in the subject box. You want to get on the fast track to your plan B? You want to see how gringos and expats do the living large thing here in Latin America? Well, there's no better way to find out and get the highest quality boots on the ground experience you possibly can than to sign up for my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. So again, shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and put seminar in the subject box. All right, now, some more tips when setting up your own Expat Plan B self-sufficient or nearly self-sufficient homestead out in the boonies. Well, once you've got the water system, electric, propane, gas, and septic tank, solar, and personal gardening thing underway, let's not forget about security and safety. Well, for one thing, you're going to want to fence in your property. A lot of people put up a cyclone fence. Others will put up a nice, solid cinder block wall. Depends on your budget and what you want. But these days, I see a lot of gringos and expats are putting up a cheap cyclone fence, and then they plant a bougainvillea bush at each fence post. And when those things start growing, they have beautiful flowers, of course, come in three or four colors. And soon enough, the new branches are growing and interweaving with the spaces in the cyclone fence. And within 6 months to a year, you've got a fantastic, continuous, beautiful bush with a million gigantic thorns. A tremendous deterrent for both man and beast. Look, anywhere you live in the world, you have to take precautions. If you're not going to be home for days at a time, people will sooner or later figure it out. Now, if you're in a gated, guarded community, you don't have to worry much at all. However, if you're homesteading way out in the boonies, if there's no sign of life at all, eventually someone's going to try to break in and see what you've got. That happens quite frequently with people who own beach houses who only come out on weekends. And I'll tell you, just like the security experts will tell you, you have to make the house look like it's lived in. So then what do you do if you're leaving a couple days, a week, or even a month? The easiest solution to that is to have a live-in cleaning lady or gardener. But suppose you only need a gardener a couple days a week or a cleaning lady once or twice a week. Well, do remember, every middle-class, upper-middle-class, and wealthy household has what they call a cuarto de servicio, a maid's room, usually with an outside entrance. Actually, the translation for that in English is pretty degrading. It's servants' quarters. Yeah, right. Anyway, here's how I and many expat gringos handle it. I have a full-time gardener and a part-time cleaning lady, but I prefer it when I'm gone for extended periods of time to have my gardener stay over 24/7, so you make arrangements with them. You tell them ahead of time you're going to be gone for 2 weeks, a month, whatever, and generally they jump at the chance to make the extra bucks. In fact, when I'm gone for days at a time, I pay my gardener $15 a day, that's his usual salary, and an extra $5 to stay the night. So I pay him $20 a day, and I buy him his food, and he's got cable TV, a refrigerator, a little stove, and he stays in the maid's spare room, and it's got a sink, toilet, and a shower. So, for example, if I'm gone 10 days, the guy makes $200. A good deal for both of us. Though it could have been the cleaning lady, too, because someone's got to be there to feed the dogs. Oh, yeah, let's talk about dogs. When you live out in the boonies homesteading, I suggest you have at least one big dog. Rottweiler, Doberman. I mention those two because Latinos are very afraid of those particular breeds. The fact is, Dobermans are rare here in Latin America, but Latinos have seen movies on TV showing Dobermans attacking people. So as soon as they see the pointed ears, that fear is deep in their mindset. And Rottweilers, man, everybody's afraid of Rottweilers, though they're really nice dogs unless you treat them mean. The thing is, if a Rottweiler gets in a fight with another dog, he'll tear it to pieces. And Latinos know that. So anyway, I have a couple Dobermans and a young Rottweiler about 7 months old. And like any puppy, likes to get into mischief. He'll bring things into the laundry room, that's where he lives. He steals things from the yard all the time. He's eaten the cleaning lady's sandals and the gardener's shoes more than once. Digs up flower beds, chews up sprinkler nozzles. Does all the things normal dogs do when they're young, except he's a big one and very strong. 80 pounds, 7 months old. So yes, he can do some damage. Anyway, the other day, I saw him out on the patio playing with something. He's usually tossing a rock around, having a good old time. And then I noticed it wasn't a rock or a stick. He'd cornered a snake. I had a closer look, and turns out he was playing with one of the most deadly snakes in all of Latin America, a coral snake. I instantly yelled to my maintenance guy, "Get your fat machete over here." And with a whack, he lopped his head off. These guys with machetes, by the way, are used to seeing snakes and killing just the poisonous ones. No big deal to him. Let's face it, they're always in the bush, and where do snakes hang? In the bush. Anyway, that was the first time in 28 years I'd ever seen a coral snake. I'd heard about them. Over the years, I've seen a few snakes, and they weren't venomous. Though I know there's a few poisonous ones around. But the coral snake, they say, if it bites you and you don't get treatment, you're dead in 2 hours. Now, I don't want to scare you, especially the ladies out there, but if you're out in the boonies homesteading, and you don't keep your yard trimmed down, there will be critters. By the way, my gardener said, that one surely came out of the brush because he chopped the brush in the lot next door down to the nub. So basically, this guy was looking for another place to live, taking a shortcut through my yard. So as far as my big little Rottweiler, was his lucky day. Oh, and here's the stats here in Latin America. Only about 1 out of 50 snake bites are from a coral snake. They're pretty non-confrontational unless you actually step on one or corner one, like my little Rottie did. By the way, practically all hospitals and clinics in Latin America have anti-venom on hand, so if you ever do get nailed by a snake, and I don't know personally anyone who ever has, you just head to the nearest hospital or clinic. By the way, you're much more likely to die falling out of your own bed than being bit by a snake. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.